This afternoon, we are going to be going over the calculations for the kinetics experiment. And I realized this morning that some of you might be having a difficult time relating to this experiment because you're not doing it in real life. And even after I had come to that realization, kinetics, even though we've been talking about it for several classes now, this method of initial rates is something that still might be confusing, and there's an awful lot of math that we're going to be doing here. Not complicated math, but just lots of small calculations. So let me just acknowledge that first thing that I said, the fact that you're not doing the experiment in person, so that you're not seeing the color change or experiencing your own self preparing the two different test tubes that hold the different parts of the solution. That's just to remind you that until those two things combine, the two test tubes, no reaction's going on. But that means that when you're measuring the reagents out, you have to be careful to keep the appropriate things separate. And then, even though it's just a color change, still some of you might connect to that, saying, okay, this is because of the different reactions going on in solution. So we don't have that. But we do have what the main point of the experiment is, which is that we're supposed to be coming up with a rate law for something. Now, if I write just the abbreviated equation, like not a full reaction equation, just to mention what the reactants and the main product are. In our reaction that we're studying, potassium iodide and ammonium peroxide disulfate are the two reagents that are possibly going to show up in the rate law. And they react to produce our product, triiodide. So the point of this is that this is the reaction with the rate-limiting step being studied. And here's the one key thing I want to add to that now, that the goal is to come up with some rate law. And that means that potassium iodide may or may not be included in this expression, the rate law, and the peroxide disulfate may or may not be included. Now, to make this look more familiar, let me go back and make this iodide, since that's the way it's represented in the text, and this is peroxide disulfate. A and B are what effectively we're solving for in this whole procedure, to see if there is a relationship between the reagents and the rate law. And the reason I say it that way is because what if there is no relationship? What if you changed one of these concentrations and nothing happened to the rate? Well, that would mean that that rate law does not involve that particular reagent in the rate-limiting step. So let me say this even more methodically, what we're going to do. We have two principal portions of the experiment that together will get at what this rate law is. In one portion of the experiment, you hold everything constant in terms of concentration, except for I minus, and there is technically the fact that there is nitrate that we replace the I minus with, so that we can keep a constant total solution volume, and so that we can keep a constant ion concentration. But in terms of the reagents participating in the rate-limiting step, there's only the iodide that's going to be involved first, as far as concentrations changing. And we'll do several different runs with different concentrations to see how changing the concentration affects rate. We'll then do exactly the same thing over again, but this time we'll hold potassium iodide constant, but now the ammonium peroxide disulfate will change, along with its counter or placebo reagent, the sulfate, the thing, again, that's just there to balance charge and balance volume. So then we'll only have one reagent again, the peroxide disulfate, where we're changing the concentration, and then we're going to see, is there an effect on rate? And then if there is, what kind of effect is there? So let me just very briefly summarize this. Part A is where the potassium iodide concentration is changed. to determine the order of the reaction. Meaning, is it one molecule involved, first order, second molecule, two molecules involved, second order? What is that involvement? Part B is the same. It's just that the ammonium peroxidisulfate is changed. So this will be the main discussion today once I finish doing a little bit of review. Because last time I talked about how there are actually three different chemical reactions going on. And this one so far that I've been talking about is the main one being studied for the rate law. But if you can remember at all that discussion last time, there are two other reactions that both serve a purpose. So what I've called reaction two that has sodium thiosulfate that ends up reacting with the triiodide. So previously I had focused on the fact that triiodide is produced in one reaction and then consumed in two others. As a reminder, the whole point of the second reaction is that it's the one that controls the extent that reaction one occurs. And let me just emphasize that, yes, as before, I said that it consumes triiodide as it is formed. There's one other comment that's going to come up later, so let me go ahead and write it here. That after reviewing all this, I'm going to get to the point to say thiosulfate controls the stoichiometry. Meaning that the real purpose of reaction two, like I said, is to control the extent. It's like it's controlling the finish line, how far the reaction's going to go before we choose to stop timing it. I word it that way because the reaction doesn't stop when the color changes. And I'm going to come back to that one later again to explain it further. It's just we stop timing the reaction when there's a color change. So I'm getting a little ahead of myself because I'm mentioning the color change. But about the stoichiometry, every reaction has the same amount of thiosulfate in it. That means every reaction goes the same virtual distance before it changes color. And so whatever calculations we're going to do, focusing around stoichiometry, meaning focusing on how much concentration changed, it's all going to start with thiosulfate. Now, I already mentioned this color change, and that is the purpose of reaction three. So the reagent there is starch, and it is the reaction that causes the mixture to change colors. Signaling the end of the reaction. More correctly, the end of the timing of the reaction. Products are still being formed, but once the color change occurs, at some point you can no longer see it getting darker. And so the whole point is that the starch binds reversibly with the triiodide to change colors. So, reaction one, the one that we're studying, makes the triiodide. The starch tries to complex with it to turn it colors. The thiosulfate delays the process because it destroys the triiodide as it's formed. Once the thiosulfate runs out, then there's enough triiodide around for the color change to occur, and that thiosulfate runs out the same point in every reaction, and that's why it's going to be the foundation of the stoichiometry. Are there any questions on that little bit of review before we move on? Okay, so then let's start the calculation discussion. And let's remind ourselves how rate is going to be calculated here. So if you go back to the previous set of notes, what I had said is, ideally, we would want to express the reaction rate in terms of the product triiodide. That's because if you go back and look at the stoichiometry, it's actually got a 1 in the full reaction equation. Remember, just to be in a slight hurry, I abbreviated the equations up above just to show the key substances that I wanted to talk about. So we do want to relate it to triiodide. But triiodide, there are different concentrations that you start out with in solution. There's something else that controls how far the reaction goes, and that's the thiosulfate. So that means we want to relate triiodide to thiosulfate concentration change. Now, if I may look back at one of the previous sets of notes, then you can see the stoichiometry here is 1 to 2, meaning one triiodide reacts with two different thiosulfates. So that means that thiosulfate's concentration would in fact change more rapidly by double than the triiodide. So if we want to relate to thiosulfate, which is changing more, then there's this 1/2 that we have to put in there. And you know, I realized I forgot this morning, there's technically a negative that goes in there too. As the triiodide is forming, but the thiosulfate is disappearing. So now let me write down a little explanation again how we ended up with this expression. So the triiodide, that's more appropriate to calculate for rate because that's the product of reaction one. In other words, the product of the reaction with the rate limiting step. But we want to relate it to the thiosulfate because that's what controls, to put it that way, the finish line. And then, up above here for reaction 2, I said the reaction 2 controls stoichiometry. So looking at the full equation, that's where this 1/2 comes from. It's due to stoichiometry. One of the things that's going to end up taking time is the fact that the concentrations that we really use in the solution are not like the concentrations that you start with. And let me go ahead and just put this in right now, because I think some confusion came this morning from not seeing this all together. So here, these are the tables from part A. In fact, let me label that. Oh, yes, it does appear to be frozen. One moment. There we go. And, in fact, since we're here, let me anticipate something else. If I just circle one of the reactions, then we have the total volume. Is 1.9 milliliters. So again, if you just simply add up all the volumes of all the reagents there, you get the total of 1.9. So now up above, we have the original concentration. So let me highlight that as well. And there's another term to use besides original, which is stock. So the stock concentrations. So, if you don't recall, the general formula for dilution is that the concentration that you actually have in solution is equal to the concentration of that stock solution times how much of that stock solution that you used divided by what the total volume of solution is. So just recall molarity times volume, that's moles. And if we divide moles by volume, that gives us molarity again. And maybe instead of actual, I should say diluted concentration. So, in this case, we want to calculate the concentration of thiosulfate. And our original stock concentration, if you look at the table, is 0.012 molar. And then, technically, we could use milliliters for our volume, but we really shouldn't, because hypothetically, if we're calculating moles, we need liters, not milliliters of solution. So looking at the table, as I probably said a zillion times, thiosulfate, we use the same amount every time. And so it is 0.0002 liters, 0.2 milliliters. And it's the same total solution volume every time, which is 0.0019 liters. So now putting those two together, or multiplying everything out, I get the number 0.00126. So now if we substitute that back into our equation for rate, we get that rate is equal to 1/2 the change of thiosulfate concentration divided by time. So that's 1/2 times 0.00126 divided by time. And when we solve, we get 0.00063 divided by delta T. And if you look back at the previous notes on this, I had said that we would be able to rewrite this as an expression where we had a constant that was simply divided by time. And that's, again, why we tried to keep everything the same, including the amount of reaction that occurs, because that means we're only measuring one variable, the time itself. Okay, so now we're ready to start moving on with showing how to do the calculations for one of the tables. And we already have the table up above here for part A. Let me put in just one part of that table again here so I can refer to it. And let me title what's going on here. So we're going to calculate order parameter A. And so that is for part A of the experiment, which is reactions 1 through 4. Now, there's a set of data that I must have collected from one of my students in a previous year, because looking back through past notes, I found the following data. So if we look at reaction number 1, 2, 3, 4, the time in terms of seconds was 36, and then 75, 133, and 290. Now, look at the set of data, look at the set of volumes of potassium iodide being used. So there, you see we start out with 0.8, then 0.4, then 0.2, then 0.1. And remember, that's volume, not concentration. But it's the same total solution volume, so it's proportional. So in this case, we've got, let me try to explain what the point is by observing this. If we see that we're changing only potassium iodide concentration, and again, realize that next door, yes, the nitrate's changing, but that's the one that's just there to maintain total solution volume and ion concentration. So as far as what's participating in the rate limiting step, then you have potassium iodide changing. The amount of time it takes for the reaction to occur also changes. So even without doing any math, we know that that reagent is going to show up in the rate law. And let me write that point down. In part A, only the concentration of potassium iodide changes in each trial. And then separate statement, since changing the concentration of iodide changes the rate, and how do we know it changes the rate? Well, because it changes how much time it takes. That means that potassium iodide is involved in the rate limiting step. All that's left is to figure out how. Now, this might be hard to describe just by looking at these numbers, but imagine this. You go from 0.8 to 0.2 to point, I'm sorry, no, you don't. You go from 0.8 to 0.4 to 0.2 to 0.1, so every time the concentration gets cut by half. So then, if this was a first order reaction, what is the definition of a first order reaction? where there's a linear relationship between concentration and rate. So if the concentration was to double, the rate should double. In this case, if the concentration goes down by half, if it's a first order reaction, the rate should go down by half. Now, rate going down by half means it takes double the amount of time. So if we look at our first reaction there, it takes 36 seconds. We have the concentration of potassium iodide, and now it takes 75 seconds. Well, double 36 is 72. So that's pretty close. If we took twice as much time again, because we cut the concentration in half again, well, double 72 is 144. Not so far off from 133. If we double it again, it would be 288, and that's much closer to this 290. So it looks like that might be what's going on. Now, what if this was a second order reaction? Well, then there'd be a square relationship. So every time it would take four times longer, not just twice as long. If this was a third order reaction, it would be an eightfold relationship. So in other words, as you go from reaction to reaction, cutting the a concentration will cause an eightfold change in the rate. There is a way to do this more systematically and more mathematically, which is what we're going to do next. Let me show you now how mathematically we're going to come up with order. And one key thing I think I left out this morning is to show where this relationship comes from. So let's say that we have the rates of reaction 1 versus reaction 2. You know, we're going to have a rate law, K with the iodide concentration in trial 1 raised to the A power, and then we have the peroxydisulfate concentration, and that's raised to the B power. So same thing with trial 2. All I'm doing is writing out the rate law based on each individual trial. Now, the peroxydisulfate is the same concentration in all the reactions in part A. That's the whole point. So that means we're going to be able to cancel out this part of the equation here. And just let me put an explanation note here. So all peroxydisulfate concentrations the same in part A. So that means rate of reaction 1 versus reaction 2 reduces to this. And notice, of course, the rate constants are going to cancel. So we get simply this. Iodide concentration in reaction 1 raised to the A power divided by iodide concentration in reaction 2 raised to the B power. So we can rewrite that like the following. Just take the ratio of the concentrations, and that ratio, oh, I'm sorry, not B power, A power, there you go. We can pull out the A power, simplify the expression a little bit. Now, in part A, the concentration of any two trials, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, is equal to 2. So that means this expression reduces just to 2 to the A. So to rewrite it more cleanly, we get rate of reaction 1 divided by rate of reaction 2 is just 2 to the A. Now, math happens, and you get the following expression. A is equal to the natural log of rate 1 divided by rate 2, and then that whole thing is divided by the natural log of 2. So, then, for part A. Reactions 1 and 2, 2 and 3, and 3 and 4 are compared. To determine the order parameter A. So now just to show an example calculation. So reaction one rate, using the trial data I gave on the previous page, that's going to be 0.00063 divided by the time, which was 36 seconds. So that's 1.75 times 10 to the negative 5 when you work that out. And then for reaction two, similar expression, 00063 divided by, now it's 75 seconds, and that's going to get us 8.4 times 10 to the negative 6. And again, those times, from the previous calculations, previous page, and then again, the times came from the data set. So to calculate A, we would just substitute everything in. A would be equal to the natural log of rate 1, which is 1.75 times 10 to the negative 5, divided by rate 2, which is 8.4 times 10 to the negative 6, and that whole thing is divided by the natural log of 2. And it turns out that that equals 1.05. But no, it's not possible to have 1.05 molecules. And so it works out to be 1. And that means the reaction is first order. In potassium iodide. So, what I want to do is to take the other sets of data and show you on a spreadsheet how to more quickly calculate the other trials. Because you have to do this exact same process to come up with the B parameter for peroxydisulfate. It's all exactly the same math, except there you have trials 5 through 8. So you'd compare 5 and 6, 6 and 7, 7 and 8, in order to come up with B. But before we get any further, like I said, let me show you how to do the rest of it on a computer. So I have an empty spreadsheet here, and because I've been using spreadsheets for all of time, I am still using Microsoft Excel, but a lot of spreadsheet programs out these days work very similarly. So even if the commands I'm using aren't exactly the same type of features should be available in whatever you're using, because we're not doing anything terribly complicated. So what I want to work on first is coming up with the rate so that we can come up with this order parameter for the different trials. So let's start by doing just that. I'm going to create a table here where I have reaction 1, reaction 2, reaction 3, and reaction 4. And as far as the time it took, it was 36 seconds, 75 seconds. Let's see, what was it? It was 133 and 290. So I did a very quick kind of poll this morning, and I determined that a lot of people don't really know that much about spreadsheets. Like, you might have used them, but you don't know some tricks. So first thing is, if you're using Excel, for example, to make sure you're putting in an equation, start out by hitting the equal sign, because then you're telling it you're putting in an equation, not just some label. Now, in this case, the equation is going to be 0.00063 divided by the change in time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to select that 36 seconds, and notice what's happened. The box, the cell that 36 is in, now has what's called a marquee around it. And it's flashing to show you there's the piece of data that you put into your equation. And it turns out that that is the same color as the variable name that's now used in that equation. So it just helps you to see where the piece of data you're using ends up. And so if I hit enter, it's going to give us the same value I got earlier, 0.000175. Now, here's the really cool thing. You don't have to type the formula in over again. If I select that first cell where I wrote the formula in, and notice there's this little corner there. So on the lower right-hand side, if I grab that corner, hold onto the mouse, and drag the box down, it automatically copies the formula, but it does one better than that. It says, oh, this guy must want to do the same calculation on this whole set here. And so that's what it does. It adjusts. So if you look at each cell, and to tell what's going on, if you look up above where the letters A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H are, there's a small line there that's called the formula bar. That's where you can type in directly to edit what's in a cell. So on that formula bar, in the first line, you see that it's blah, blah, blah divided by C4. Next line, it automatically made it C5, C6, C7. So in case you missed how I did that, again, lower right-hand corner, you can see that there's this kind of thick dot compared to the other corners of the box. So I grab that corner and drag it, and then there's the numbers. So it makes it very easy to do multiple calculations. Now let's say that we're trying to do that order calculation. So we're going to compare reactions 1 and 2, and then reactions 2 and 3, and then reactions 3 and 4. So what was the formula for that? Well, it was two different logs. So it was the natural log of what? A ratio. It was a natural log of rate 1 divided by rate 2. And so look at that, the way that it's coloring that in. The two different boxes I'm using highlighted two different colors to help show where they're ending up in your formula. Now that whole thing is supposed to be divided by the natural log of 2. And I discovered this morning that you do have to have the parentheses there for it to understand what you're doing. And out comes the same 1.05, well, I guess technically 1.06, that I got earlier. Now, same thing. The next line, we want to do the same comparison, just on the next set of data. We want to do reactions 2 and 3. And then the next line, we want to do 3 and 4. The program is smart enough to recognize that automatically. So if I grab that lower right-hand corner and I drag, then I get my other calculation of A for reactions 2 and 3, and then 3 and 4. So the point of trial, or part A, is going to be come up with that average. Which, how can you calculate it? Simple. Hit equal, type average, and then you just select your data after you put the parentheses in. And when I say select the data, I'm going to take my mouse, I'm going to click on the first piece of data and drag and select a box that incorporates that whole set of data. So you don't have to know how the spreadsheet really works inside, like what G4 and G6 mean. It helps. But it did it for you. So when I close off the parentheses, it calculates it for me. And this set of data came out pretty well, because even out to two digits past the decimal point, it's 1.00. So not bad. So that would be how to calculate the order parameter. Questions about what I did in the spreadsheet here. Now, we're going to come back to the spreadsheet in a moment, but I need to write some more in the written notes. Okay, so sharing the iPad again. So on the previous page, where did it go? The first page here, I said that part A was to determine the order parameter A by changing potassium iodide concentration. Exact same set of concentrations or calculations. We're going to do for part B in order to get order parameter B. So let me just write this in the notes. That in part B, reactions 5 and 6, 6 and 7, and 7 and 8 are compared to determine the order parameter B. And I'll just tell it to you right now, because I already showed you the example set of data for part A, which gets order parameter A. Both reagents turn out to be first order. You still will need to do the calculations to prove that, but that means that the reaction rate law is K times iodide concentration times peroxydisulfate concentration. The last thing that's left is to calculate K, at least for parts A and B. The last thing is left is to calculate K. And so reactions 1 through 8, in other words, all of part A and part B, are used to calculate K. Part A, you're only changing the iodide concentration. Part B, you're only changing the peroxydisulfate concentration. But they're all the same reaction, just with different concentrations. More importantly, and this will come back later, they're all the same reaction temperature. So we use parts A and B together to come up with the rate constant. Now, how do we do that? Well, we just substitute in the concentrations. In other words, let me just solve the equation. We get that K is equal to R divided by the product of the iodide and peroxydisulfate concentrations. Excuse me. But the same problem we had earlier. These concentrations are not the same as the stock concentrations. I think I took the time to define that word earlier, but just to say it again, if we know that we have a stock room, Well, that's a stock solution, something that we keep around and use when needed. Technically, in real life, this one, the I think both the peroxydisulfate and the thiosulfate, I think they have to be prepared fresh. But still, it's a bulk solution that's just given to the class. But you mix it up with other reagents, just like we did before. So it's the same kind of calculation to do dilution as what you saw previously. So even though it's the same kind of calculation, let me at least write it out once, because we're about to switch back to the spreadsheet again. So the diluted concentration of potassium iodide, the concentration really used, is equal to the stock concentration times the volume used divided by the total solution volume. So if you look up at the table that's on page 2 of the lab notes, in the, at least page 2 of the, this version of the lab notes, we find that the original concentration is 0.20 molar. We use 0.80 milliliters in the first trial, so not worrying about sig figs, that turns into 0.0008. Already had told you the total solution volume is 0.0019 liters. And if you calculate all this out, I get 0.0842 molar. Now let's switch back to the spreadsheet for a moment. So let me create a new table. And again, I'm only going to do reactions 1 through 4, because that's all I had data for. Well, data that's different than the one that you're going to get. So let me put in the potassium iodide volume in liters and the peroxydisulfate. Relabel that. So iodide volume in liters, volume, iodide. And then we have the volume of the peroxydisulfate, also in liters. So looking at the table, the volume of the iodide is 0.0008 liters, 0.0004 liters, 0.0002 liters, and 0.001 liters. The volumes of the peroxydisulfate are all the chain are all the same, and that's because this is part A where we're only looking at the effect of iodide. So here we get 0.0004, 0.0004, 0.0004, 0.0004. Now, if we want to calculate the concentration of potassium iodide, or the concentration of I minus, that's equal to what? 0.2 molar times the volume used divided by 0.0019. And that gives me the same 0.0842 that we got earlier. Then I click the lower right-hand portion of that box, and I drag it just like before. And it's going to give me all the concentrations. We can do the same type of formula for the peroxydisulfate. So it's equal to its initial concentration, which happens to be 0.2 also, multiplied by the volume of it used, divided by the total volume, 0.0019. So that concentration, as it should be, is the same in all the trials. So then, if I want to come up with the order parameter A, or no, not A, we're doing the rate constant, K. That was equal to the rate, which I still have the rate up above here in reaction 1, divided by the product of these two concentrations. So again, look at the coloration of the screen to show where the pieces of data ended up. And I hit enter, and it gives me a K value. Now, because reaction 1, 2, 3, 4 is listed in the same order, in both of these mini tables, I can just take this, click, drag the right-hand corner, and it will automatically come up with my other K values. So once you type in a reaction equation once, if you use the spreadsheet correctly, you don't have to type it in over and over and over and over and over. It makes things a heck of a lot easier. So any questions about what I did in the spreadsheet here?
Professor, do you mind telling me the equation that you used for K again?
Yeah, so take a look at it in the formula bar there. So D4, that's the rate that was in reaction 1, divided by E10 and F10. Those are the concentrations I calculated there.
Thank you.
Sure. Concentration of S2O8. So you want that formula?
I wrote most of them down.
Oh, someone else was asking for it, I believe.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Any other questions about the spreadsheet? Then there's only one other thing I'm going to introduce today, because there are two other parts of the experiment, but one of them is simply the use of a catalyst. And we already know what a catalyst does. It speeds up the reaction. So we don't really need to do the calculations there, because we didn't do it in real life. So the only other calculation that you're going to have to do is, I believe, called part C, and that is for activation energy. So let me show you what that's about. One minute while I get this shared. So the last part of this determining the activation energy that comes from manipulating the Arrhenius expression. K is equal to A times E to the negative EA over RT. And let me just put here, that is the Arrhenius expression. Now, this is the same mathematical format as the Clausius-Clapeyron equation, and we're going to do the same process to this as we did for the Clausius-Clapeyron. So in other words, let's take the natural log. Oops. Oh dear, where'd I go? There we go. So we'll take natural log of K is equal to natural log of A times E to the negative EA over RT. Now, if you have a log of a product, that is equal to the sums of the individual logs. So I can write this as natural log of K is equal to natural log of A plus the natural log of E to the negative EA over RT. Well, natural log and E do opposite things of each other. So it's not really correct to call it cancellation, but that's kind of what's going on here. And so we're left with natural log of K is equal to natural log of A plus negative EA over RT. Now, let me rewrite that by flipping around the position of the things on the right-hand side. So I get natural log of K is equal to negative EA over RT plus natural log of A. Rewriting it one last time. Natural log of K is equal to negative EA over R times 1 over T plus natural log of A. Eek. So now we do exactly the same substitution of variables that we did before. So natural log of k, we call that y now. The 1 over t, that becomes x. Negative ea over r, that becomes the slope, m. And the natural log of a, that ends up this constant, b. So we get a linear equation in the format of y is equal to mx plus b. In this case, it's going to be a negative slope. And this is going to be linear if we graph natural log of k on the y-axis and 1 over temperature on the x-axis. Just like in the vapor pressure lab, the slope is going to have a physical meaning. The slope will be simply equal to the negative of the activation energy divided by R. So all we have to do to finish up for this is to for me to go over how to come up with the rate constants K for this portion. But this has already been a heck of a lot of math for today. And so this is where I'm going to end the calculations just for the day, because this is not going to be due at least for a week. But at least I've given you an introduction to all the main kinds of calculations so you can go ahead and get started.